You are listening to Let's Go, the Ouija Anime podcast about Ouija Anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Yo.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering anime that aired the week of the 25th of November to the 1st of December 2019. And actually, Dwayne, you probably could get a little bit closer to your microphone.
Will do.
Okay. Right, starting off with Super Shiro, Episode 7, The Fun Museum.
Oh, great. I love The Fun Museum.
This is the first thing I watched, and I know they went to a museum, and as they were dogs, there's two things stuck out. Obviously, they're in a museum and they're dogs, so therefore dinosaurs are going to have to be involved at some point.
Yeah, legally contracted,
But also, you get the feeling when because they're dogs, they feel like they have to be obedient to humans when humans approach them.
Obedient to stupid humans who just...
I wasn't on that joke until the last time they did it. I was like, first joke I was like, eh, second time, eh, third time I was like, okay, that's fucking hilarious. But yeah, it's weird. It's like they have to keep it on the DL that they're, super powered dogs.
Yes.
Strange that.
Yeah. So because there's a security guard, wandering the halls.
Again, no face, just the feet and the hands, that kind of thing. Yeah.
His recurring gag is that they keep on messing up the exhibits and he'll stop and he'll look at them and he'll go, everything looks fine.
Yeah, the torch passing clearly over all the problems.
Yeah. Well, even though at the first thing they messed up, I think it could have been a dinosaur that looked like that. They are already, like, you know, finding new fossils and putting things together in new ways. So that could be a way.
Yeah, yeah. They have, like, the... what was the fucking one? They thought it was four-legged, then they thought... It was a Iguanodon. They thought it was four-legged, then they thought it was two-legged. Now they're pretty sure it was, like ambi-legged, but mostly four-legged.
Yeah. But instead of getting the T-Rex skeleton rearranged into the remains of, I guess, Clifford the Big Red Dog. Yes.
Yeah, pretty much. I did like that as well, because they're like, what did it look like? I don't know, like a guy. And so they obviously make it back into a dog when they wreck it.
Shira ends up with a knight's helmet at one point, spinning, because Shira's trying to protect all the exhibits.
Because he's read the signs, he reads the tourist information, he's like, ah, do not touch, okay, can do. Whereas the other lads just get stuck in.
There's lots of good, you know, typical kind of character and comedy, how you just get in the museum, hiding in the paintings, and you know, just like blending in with the hieroglyphics on the wall in the Egyptian room, all that kind of malarkey. Favorites.
I don't know what the reference is for the Animal Protection Act bit. That feels like a gag.
Yeah, I feel like that must be something.
It was a very important day for dogs all over Japan. It's like their Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
So, like, if you're a dog and they make it that you can't kill any animals, then that's bad, right? Because you eat meat. Right?
Sure, quote unquote meat in this can.
Well, I mean, like, something that used to be a thing walking or swimming around is what I mean. You know what I mean.
And as Hachiko, a stuffed Hachiko is there, that means they are in the National Science Museum.
I love the way he recognized Hachiko by smell. That's great. And he gets really upset thinking about it.
He probably knew the guy. No, like, he sniffed arses, which is shaking hands for them. It's like, oh, he's a cool dude.
When I'm king, I will name the Americas after you, Hachi.
Anyway, good stuff, as always. It's super consistent as a show.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got Null and Petter, Episode 9, My Big Sister's Brutal with a Hammer.
Oh, God.
In which it opens with them luring the bugs to eat Petter's terrible food, because the bugs like it. And then it sort of pans, and they've got set up blocks of C4 all over the place.
like, I they're going a bit overkill on this. The blocks of C4 everywhere, the blocks of C4 on timers, but they're also connected to a massive plunger. And I'm just like, pick one, lads. Time bombs or you know, mark bombs, whichever.
Multiple redundancies. If a timer malfunctions, it can always go for the manual detonation.
So they blow them up, but it's not good enough.
They just sort of rain down and sort of slime back together,
And the ray guns run out of power, the hammer's been eaten, but that's okay because Peta hasn't broken out her ultimate weapon, which is another hammer. It's like one of the hammers out of the Fallout games with like a rocket, the ones which have got the rockets attached to them.
Ah, fuck it, I love Rocket Hammer. I like the logic of I can swing it better by rocket power.
Yeah, like the same way as you do from Alita, as well.
Yeah,
a lot of things have taken that. But yeah, they got the Rocket Hammer. They appear to have a force field outside of their house, which is holding them at bay for now.
They realize that when they combine, there's like a glow, and that must be the core of them, so we must destroy the core, as they say in Gradius.
Yeah.
And they think they can make a hole with the hammer, but Pear's too big, but Null isn't. Null could get in through that hole. And that's the plan, and it works. They destroy all the bugs by destroying the core of the biggest one. And everything seems to be back to normal. And does it abruptly end, or is it just the Crunchyroll player on PlayStation 4?
I think it's the Crunchyroll thing, because I've seen it do that ending with a lot of the song endings as well. Yeah. It's weird. Just suddenly, like suddenly the video feed cuts, and you're like, oh, okay, so, I guess we're done.
It felt like there was another beat that I missed as it abruptly ended.
It's done that before in this show and a few others as well.
Yeah, because it felt like it may have all been a trick to get her to be, because they end it at school.
Yeah, it ends it at school, and she does admit one time, it's like, yeah, we gotta go back to school. And, you know, her sister's like, oh, it's like, I mean, like, because we have to fight the monsters and they're concentrated at the school, not because I want to go to school. You know, it's like, it's trying to trick her into bringing her back. But like, yeah, did we miss like a joke or like the town glitching out again or something? I'm curious, but it's an odd one. But it is kind of cartoony hijinks. Not as good as Super Shiro, but I mean, like, what is?
No, but it's got some good action animation when they're attacking, doing the final attack. There's some good animation there. Now, please tell me what happens in Blade of the Immortal Act 8, Mugai Ryu.
Stuff's so gross, I'm thinking of dropping the show.
Yeah. It was about this. Gotta be unnecessary. Towards the end.
Oh, fucking hell, man. Too many, like, congratulations to the anime of the last season for making me feel sick to my stomach. You've done a bang-up job of it, but stop doing it. Stop fucking doing it.
Okay, we get it. Shira's a bad guy. You don't need to...
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Because of the viler and viler behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Before any of that, though, what's it, Rin and Manji, we're going to have a little meeting with the Mugai Ryu dudes, get a load of their plan. Okay, we got like a lead on this, on Natsu. We know he's going to be going to Kaga to get formally installed as a dojo. And the plan is they're going to go take him out on the way before he even gets there. And Manji's kind of getting out of the beat on them then as well. I'm saying, so based on what you know, you must have like, you know, a lot of eyes in this dude. Probably somebody on the inside saying, yeah, totally. Oh, we got somebody there. We can write that as info. It's going to be about 80% reliable. Oh, yeah, I see. And why you want to kill this guy? Oh, he's fucking... We got our reason for doing it. Hey, this is nice digs you got here. Pretty good booze, too. If I didn't know any better, I'd say this was someone was backing you, a big money man, maybe an official money man. Maybe somebody in the government, say, who doesn't agree with what they're doing for this Natsu guy.
Yeah, the woman of the Mugai Ryu later says, like, I kind of hoped Manji would be like a big thick guy, but actually he's fairly on the ball, which is a bit unfortunate. But yeah, he's kind of like gotten him pegged as like, yeah, if you want us to work together, you should be like revealing your whole hand to me. So I know what you're working with. So I know who I'm working with, that kind of way.
Yeah.
But they're obviously holding a lot back.
Yeah. Nonetheless, like, Rin is admiring of their durability, and that's Kyakurin, is a woman who seems to get fairly high up in the thing. And think, oh, you're pretty good, you're pretty strong. I think, yeah, you flatter me, but, you know, it's not always it's not always a patch for maybe someone like you. You know, if somebody like you was fairly fairly meek, not at the best of fighting, this is something we want to do. Oh yeah, totally. I want to get strong and kill this this get revenge for my family. But
yeah, because she kind of sees this other woman to be very like her, but she assumes that they're around the same age and she's a leader of an organization. She's like, dude, I'm like fucking 10, 20 years older than you. I've had a family and kids. It's like, oh, you have kids. And it's like, not going to talk about that. Yeah. Waking up screaming in the night kind of thing. It's just like, what shit have you seen kind of thing? Yeah.
Yeah. And Martin Rinson, oh, if I can, but besides all that, though, I feel bad, you know, cause like, Manji is always like, I'm getting him all busted up while he's being my dude that helped me get on this path of vengeance. And no, I want to like, get strong and kill this Anatsu guy myself. It's like, sounds to me like you just want Manji to come in and save you all the time. So if that's what you want, fine, but don't be lying to yourself about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, the plan is going down for the big sting operation. We know he's going to be coming in by passing along this way. He's going to be disguised as a woman wearing a particular colored kimono, kind of like a green flower pattern thing. So he's got to watch out for somebody who looks like that. And Rin has seen the guy's face before, so might be able to pick him out of a crowd.
Even if he's in disguise, yeah.
Yes. And also as well, he's like, you know, carrying like a big hatchet, a very oddly shaped weapon, and if you see something like that coming around, even wrapped up, that's probably him, so we'll chase him down.
Yeah, I think Rin's the only one who's actually seen his weapon, so she can identify that as well. And yeah. She does.
Mm. She's also putting it together that, seems kind of weird, because when my family's daughter got attacked, I was trying to file reports for like days and days about the crime. If the shogunate was really not too keen on the Ito Ryu, why wouldn't the criminals come on and arrest him?
Seems yeah, like they would maybe have wanted posters up or something, sure.
Seems like maybe the shogun was putting on airs, putting on like the facade of wanting to arrest these guys and bring him in, but it's pretty probably in good with the shogunate from the beginning.
Yeah, so Rin's theory is either that they're leaving them to their own devices because they plan on using them later, or they already have an in the government. So that's giving them the slack that they need to do the fucking random murders that they tend to do.
Yeah. Anyways, a figure in a green kimono appears, and go and make a chase down for that. However, there's multiple figures in green kimonos all the way along the highway, so they kind of split up the different groups and try and like track them down. Manji, however, goes after some dude who's like fronting, saying, "I am a Natsu of the Ito Ryu. I am a master swordsman. Don't get in my way." So some dude shooting his mouth off.
I think one of the many distractions that they've set up by the look of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Come back to him later, and Manji just slaughtered a dude with about 50 of his swords. It's like, oh man, that poor guy didn't know what he was getting into. But it's split up and all, and there's a lot of decoys there. And Shira and Rin catch up with one group, and they know it's gotta be the guy. It's definitely the dude carrying like the hatchet wrapped up. That's the man. Nope, it's another fake again. It was like a fake thing, hatchet's carrying around. So the ploy trapped him. She then summons two dudes, two like, you know, obviously two
while,
of the, like,
while they were following her, these two fucking Ito Ryu guys were following them.
Oh yeah, they look so intimidating and bad. I guess these guys got some real skills, got some real moves. It's gonna be a tough fight. Shira's gonna like take him on with his really nasty looking sword, where it's like the blade is all just
like a saw blade,
jagged.
It's
really nasty. Well, we're going to be in for a long fight here, Ted. Cut to the next scene. He's already decapitated both of them.
Yeah.
But he hasn't had enough.
Yeah, the prostitute who was using herself as bait for them was walking off with the money. And he was more annoyed that when he counted, it was like, all those three people had to be paid just to kill me. Why didn't I get a job where I'm paid that much to kill one person? He was getting more annoyed about the numbers than anything else. And he decides to take it out on this one, who she was just going to walk away, because obviously she's not a fighter. She was just the bait, essentially.
Yeah, chops her leg off so she can't get away.
Mm.
And then very creepily and lasciviously, the stair starts fucking peeling off her clothing with this, again, that very nasty edged blade. to bring protestations, which gets like from the backhand across the nose. Yeah, it's just really, really unsettling stuff. Really,
it's to quote Babylon before it comes back again. It's chopping people up again, and it doesn't show it, but it shows enough that I'm entirely fucking grossed out.
Mm.
Stop doing this to me, shows.
Yeah. You probably did think, oh, von Rin's gonna like, summon their courage or resolve and take him out, right? No, Mandy just turns up, chops off Shiva's hand.
Well, she does summon her resolve and go at him, but you know, she's no match for him because he's like a master swordsman, but Mandy showing up chops his hand off and does save the day. So it's like, she can do it, but she does not have the skills still. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you got the heart, if you don't have the actual fucking, ability to back that up.
Yeah, the real kind of dip down here, because I was admiring some of the nuance it was taking approaching its villainous characters, even since seeing them kind of later on, heads on the shoulders, dude, Sabato.
It's weird they give him different context in the flashbacks, yeah.
I don't think we're going to see the same for Shira. I mean, even if we do, it's like, well, he's still, like, mutilated and raped that woman, so...
Yeah.
No, fuck him.
There's no, like, explaining that situation, yeah. Fucking, yeah. Oh, just super nasty. It's kind of grossing me out, and I'll have to consider whether I'm going to keep watching it. I know that's the intent, but like you say, there's no... Not that I need to understand the fucking serial rapist fucking motivations, but, like, I get it. He's a bad guy. You want to see him get got. Because, again, in this episode, we see your man with the spiky hair dude, Magatsu.
Magatsu, yeah.
Him kind of, like, following the scene of the crime kind of thing. And he's like, why did you leave her body on the floor? And it's like, and the other one working in the brothel is kind of like, you motherfucker, we left her here because I didn't want to see her rot. And I left her here so you could go up with it. And here's what your sword got you and that kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, you're giving motivation to the guy to really, really kill this bad dude. I'm like, but stop making him, it's like, not making him unredeemably evil, but like cartoonishly evil in a way that's just gross to fucking watch.
It's just not really fun or anyway. And I understand, Rin has got to be building up her skill, and they've taken pains to point out, this isn't something that could happen overnight, it's got something you kind of build towards.
And it's also pointing out that her living the life of someone looking for revenge just fucks you up. That it doesn't do anything other than that.
Yeah. But it feels like it is spinning its wheels. It's like, she'll try and put up a thing when Manji will come in and save her. And goes, come on, that could be just like maybe just like a one cathartic thing where she
outsmarts someone or something.
Just fucking outsmart somebody or just fucking shanks a guy. just one little bit just to show that, well, she's just like farming along this way, or it's going to be kind of constant thing, isn't it, of she wants vengeance, but isn't cut out for it. But she wants it so bad, but she isn't cut out for it. And she'll always stop just before, and then Manji will come save her because she doesn't want her bloodying her hands with this.
Like, I feel like the point that they are trying to make is that if she does catch someone with guile or skill or whatever, that she'll be on the path of vengeance, and then she'll be as monstrous as every other motherfucking character in the show. And that's a bad thing, but like you said, I think it's kind of dithering around to get to that point.
Yeah, but just do something like that. She doesn't even need to shank somebody, just like, I guess, like, get, outwit somebody or outsmart them or do something that, get one over on him, because otherwise she's just hanging around waiting to be saved, and that's not exciting to watch at all.
The closest they've gotten so far is her tricking that kid into thinking he'd already avenged his father and therefore does not need to go on the path of vengeance and ruin his life more so than it already is, which is like, that's the closest she's come to outsmarting someone, and that was like a little kid, so that's not that's not making her look great.
So I'll give it another like go still, because I'm also intrigued by developments going on in the background. It's like, it's like, you know, this conspiracy reaching up to the highest levels of the shogunate, perhaps, you know, all the way up to City Hall.
Besides the dithering on Rin and your man just being like unspeakably evil, it's still interesting. It's still like when they put in those background characters, like Rin talking to the woman who runs the woman who runs the building that they're staying in, where she's kind of copped on. Is like, listen, I can tell you guys aren't fucking travelers because you've been here 2 days in a row, and no one stays here that long in a row, that kind of thing. And, you know, Rin's asking her leading question is like, say if someone wanted to dress up as a prostitute and sneak their way in, is like, could they do that? And she's like, oh, this is all theoretical, right? Purely theoretical. Wink, wink, wink. And this woman has like scars on her hands. And I don't know if that woman's ever going to be in it again, but like everyone and random background characters like herself, have an interesting, like they feel like their own characters. They feel like they're in their own world, that kind of thing. They have their own shit going on, which is great, which is why Rin's lack of development with all this, everyone else has their own things going on and everyone else is in this fully developed world. And that guy who's just super evil for just for the shits of it. It makes it stand out all the more. And obviously just the sheer ugliness of his evil is, the thing that mainly put me off. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'll give it a little bit,
yeah, sure.
A little bit more and see if we can, overcome this. But we'll find out next time, won't we?
Then we've got Dr. Stone, episode 22, The Treasure, in which our spelunking buddies head off in search of tungsten.
Who is not a person, the actual rock. The actual rock.
They keep saying magma in this episode, and I was wondering, and I said, is magma going, it's like, huh, were you talking to me? No, no, we're talking about magma, the molten, no, never mind, it's fine.
Yeah. And they, him and Senku end up falling in a hole because of a type of rock that I forget what it's called.
Oh, fuck, I forgot the name of it now. Yeah, it's very, very brittle stone. I know the kind.
Yes.
It's like very brittle glass.
It's Mica. It's,
Mica,
it's,
yeah.
It forms on the insides of caves. It's the sparkly bits you see in rocks sometimes.
And Chrome thought that, magma pushed Senku. Also, before they go off, again whispered something in Magma's ear.
And you just know, it's like, if you come back with them dead, I'm going to cast a spell on you. Because he's got, you know, the big shit-eating grin.
Yes.
And when they leave, it's like, finally, Senku's gone.
But it turns out it was something really nice.
I love that. That was really good.
Well, he's plotting, he's scheming, it's a scheming face. So even if he's like planning a surprise for somebody, whether it be nasty or nice, you can't help where you look. Resting scheming face.
And so Magma kind of like explains, like, he feels like he's been left behind in this, all these scientific advances. And, Senku explains, no, the world of science needs everybody. It brings everybody up.
You need an architect and the builder.
Yeah, I like the representation of that. And I love the repeating of Senku's thesis that a society needs all kinds of people. It needs fucking manipulative assholes. It needs big, dumb lunkheads who'd probably murder you if they could get up the ladder. It needs all kinds of people to function and to work.
Yeah, it's more highlighting how sort of, as good intentioned as it is, how naive and short-sighted Tsukasa's philosophy can be.
We'll only bring up good people with muscles, and just very, very dumb people. Yeah. No. Yeah, that's not really working.
Well, we already know it doesn't work because he's released a guy who is definitely not a good person.
Yeah. I'll make he's released several. Those big, where are they to get those giant muscle bound fucking guys?
I guess
I'm
probably
still questioning it.
He probably
knew prison, I suppose.
Yeah, probably.
He probably knew them from, high school MMA, which is apparently what he used to do.
Oh yeah, all those guys you saw, big musty, like fists and all star thugs, they're all
14.
13 years old, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sister jeans, can't help it.
Oh dear. Yeah, I really like that repeating of Senku's kind of, worldview and stuff. And it's like, he doesn't care of being the boss. He's like, he understands that the guy building the thing is just as important as the guy who planned to build the thing, as the guy who fucking carries the shit. All necessary.
Yeah. This is while the hole they're in is being filled with water because he's explained to Chrome how to get water. Because Chrome was already trying to fill the hole to raise them up. So he'd already got the theory figured out.
I did like the joke of he's just pouring water on Magma's head. Magma's like, what the fuck, dude?
Well, that'll take a couple of days. Got any other ideas?
I'm very mad at the Senku bot for suggesting to do that to your bathtub for the kids. That's gonna get people in fucking trouble.
Hey, kids, who had to lose your deposit on your apartment?
Oh, it was good shit. Yeah.
Senku had miscalculated there, so he was going to freeze to death, so Magma threw him out. And then we get the unfortunate gay panic joke after the break.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they do make a lot of, like, noises, just to, you know, just to give the shippers something, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, they kind of give, take away with that hand and give with the other hand at the end when Gens made a nice telescope for his husband. Or made everyone make a telescope for him because he just remembered how telescopes worked.
Really? Is that a common pairing? I thought it was a Chrome and Senku with a standard pairing. No,
I think it's plenty of pairings to go around.
Oh yeah, no, there's no fucking shortage at all. Yeah,
it's just with Senku and Gen, like they're both the pinnacle.
Skinny motherfuckers.
They're both at the pinnacle of a certain kind of branch of intellectualism, where Senku's all into the sciences and so forth. Gen is all into the psychology of people. They're both at the top of that of the particular field.
In most other shows, those two guys would be villains. I get you.
And I do like the bit in here where Chrome says, I guess what the real treasure we found was friendship.
I fucking laughed as soon as he said that before they did the beat thing. I was like, that was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And then Senku and Magma get to pull the faces this time. And Chrome's like, you don't get to pull the faces at me. I knew it was terrible the moment I opened my mouth.
Thought it would be cool, but it was lame. Again, they're having him bond with Magma, and there's like, what the fuck, Chrome? That was a really weird thing to say.
Yeah. It baits and switches because it gives you this like very hackneyed sentimentality for it spins up its own more genuine, heartful sentimentality at the end.
Yeah, more personal
characters the world we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's a nice joke on One Piece and the fact that people think that's what One Piece is, to the point where Oda had to say, no, that is not what it's going to be.
No, it's something cool. It won't be like a mirror. Telescope. It won't be like anything like that. It'll be something
really
cool.
Oh, I get you. Yeah.
One Piece was inside you all along!
Yeah, I feel like we're getting very close to seeing what One Piece is based on the latest chapter of One Piece. They bring him, he gets home and he's blindfolded. It turns out what Gen whispered into Magma's ear was, make sure you get him back in 3 days because it's his birthday. We've made him a birthday gift. We've built him an observatory and a telescope.
I like the way they don't show the telescope. They show him looking at Saturn. And I thought that was such like a beautiful thing to show his love of space and his love of science and that kind of thing.
It's, as well, like, you know, like he's genuinely kind of touched and to his soul, the very spirit of him as well, but he has to try and like, put up the revival and say, yes, this would be very practical. We can use this to watch out for Sagasa's guys who are coming in to attack us. It's like, nah, dude, stop that. You're absolutely touched by this gesture from these people.
Why you need people like Ginro in a society so they can go, hey, bet you're going to cry. And so you can hold it together. Hold your manly tears in. You get someone to egg you on, so you're just like, oh, right, yeah, I can't do that.
Yeah, so they kind of, the false tearing with Magma as well with the water early on. But then we get the revelation of, like, when Gen asked him last episode to get him to say however many days he'd been alive, that was all a trick because he'd already seen the date that Senku had carved, and that was the point in which Gen was fascinated by Senku. Even before he met him, he was impressed by him.
Yeah. This guy's fucking crazy. Crazy hot. Yeah.
But I think it's funny he thought, what about these fucking big bruiser dudes? I think this is my guy right here. This is
the guy. Yeah, this guy's got a fucking brain on him, alright. It's really solid, like, seeing that kind of character interaction, especially because basically he gets to do those reveals and those kind of, like, he did the calculations and asked leading questions and actually held on to information that wasn't relevant to him at the time, that kind of thing. You just kind of see the growth of these characters and how they're, all the relationships change and stuff. Yeah.
And there's a very subtle little like thing, and it was just, I felt so natural and flowing, because just like they were talking about the date about Christmas and how they were to figure it out, and just like, oh, that was actually him. It was a natural conversation, but it's very easily just plucked out this little nugget of information that he's going to use, not for scheming for a bad thing, but for scheming for a good thing, for a lovely, kind gesture to give to somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like these are the good guys, despite a bunch of them being assholes.
Well, yeah, that's the amazing thing about the writing, and that's what was amazing about iShield 21 as well, is that iShield 21 at the core of it had an incredible asshole, but he wasn't the main character. And this time, he didn't make that mistake. The asshole is the main character.
Yeah, but like that was kind of like more takes all guys to make a team, but this is more a society, which is even bigger. Yeah.
But like, you know, a lot of those characters, they had their own little aspect, but they're all being sort of directed and flowed back to the mastermind of the whole operation.
Yeah. I should 21. I think he's got the formula down a lot better this time around. Then we've got, next on the list, is Welcome to Demon School, Irumakun, Episode 9, Iruma's Decision and Hard Work. He's going to go up a rank, and to do that, he needs to take part in a ridiculous sport, or it sounds ridiculous because it's got a name, like, what's it called, like Execution Cannonball or something?
That's Cannonball it. Execution, or Executioner Cannonball, or something like that, yeah.
It was a game, it was a sport that's been used as a proxy war between feuding demon clans. You will throw these terrifying balls called cannons, where it's like, you know, these sharp jaws and fangs, and once they bite into, never let go. And then the objective is to try and storm the enemy's castle and take it over. But because we're in school, we can't do it on that scale. We have this sort of thing where we don't use this normal ball wise here. And we just work, within this sort of like lines in this field, because I got a big castle working out. And the room was going like, oh yes, very interesting. This is a dodgeball. What the?
It reminded me of like hurling, you know, the way like the original version of that took days and people would fucking die over in the middle of it, or they'd uproot like trees to hit the fucking ball with, that kind of shit. And then they went, let's play it on a field, because we're losing to fucking cricket right now, and this isn't going to work out.
How about, you know, a time limit on these things? Cause
yeah,
people
can go home because of their lives. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's most sports.
Pretty much. Most sports were proxy war, which was basically war, but then they had to go, that's a bit mad.
It's like football was like two villages essentially kicking the shit out of each other. Supposedly.
And
ball was there, yeah.
Okay. What happened stayed the chief decapitated head? It was like a ball of stuffed leather. Yeah, that could work.
Yeah, I can't understand why people, nerds, didn't like Unseen Academicals, the Discworld novel, but I thought that was one of the better later.
I thought it was a really good distillation of football, and I say this as a guy who doesn't like football, but it captured the feeling of being a kid with your dad watching football, and I was like, holy shit. I've never read that feeling before. That was amazing.
Yeah, he's very good at just getting like the broad appeal of something, you know. As well, he's trying to like use a novel to explain like a very broad and complex subject, like would say xenophobia or racial discrimination or nothing like that. And how everyone say, no, this is a kind of broad strokes of the thing, and how why it's fucking dumb to think about it that way, why this is good, etc., etc.
Yeah. But like, if you could, like, if Pratchett could evoke that feeling in me, a guy who doesn't really enjoy watching football and shit, I'm just like, oh yeah, I remember that sensation. That's fucked up. But like, just masterfully done. Yeah.
Yeah. But will it inspire Ruma to go up a rank?
Sorry, back on topic.
Then everyone else, because they're training, they're going to practice in this underground dodgeball arena underneath the school, which Clara likes because there's plenty of room for. Connor and Murph
running
to
around.
Run around inverted Connors. God.
And then everyone else from the class shows up, and we get like a few more hints of their powers and personalities. But still kind of lacking. I know they get much more detailed later on. But it is still Sabnock is the one. He wants to challenge Iruma, of course, as he always does. So, and then the second half, they realize, oh, I can't practice there because I'm going to get killed by my own classmates. So I'll do it at home.
And ask Granddad.
And he wants to give him a spell. Oh, he gives him a spell that will help him. And he's like, no, I want to do it on my own strength.
Yeah, because if I say the spell, I'm just using the magic energy in the ring. Your energy, not my own skill. And I want to raise up a rank, not with your skill, but with my own.
Okay.
Well, Granddad is secretly pleased.
I'll enchant your hands so you can at least catch the ball. And you start practicing from there. Oh, kill. Thank you, Granddad. Thank you, Granddad. Thank you, Granddad. Hang on. Hang on. I'm just saving this precious memory. I can savor it forevermore.
It's kind of creepy how much he's saving that memory. Yes. Yeah.
And then for the remaining 10 minutes, Opera throws balls at everyone.
But also we get like a feeling of Opera is just like, oh yeah, he's not like blank. He just has cat emotions.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I know they've
pulled by the ears.
They're re-releasing, the first work by the creator, which was called Hotel Hellheim. And the main character in that kind of has, not just have like the cat ears, but has kind of a similar face to Opera. So I wonder if it was a recycled personality that she's using in this story.
Man, I hope they do as good a job of translating all the kind of hell-based jokes. There's, I keep writing them down, but I forget them. They had, what was it, Helophone?
Yes.
Diobotany. Oh, fucking, there's some solid ones in there. Like, and obviously I know that's not in the Japanese, but I know they're doing a great job just making those puns work.
And then, Alice and Clara show up as well.
To cheer him on and to help,
And Aruba puts his hair in a ponytail, which seems to have got a lot of fans of the show excited.
He looks really different with the hair tied up. It's weird.
It does. Yeah. Because the gist of it is that we know already that he's going to be very good at the dodge part of dodgeball.
But you need to hit the other guy, which means you need to catch the ball. Yeah.
Yeah. So he spends most of the episode trying to catch the ball. And then realizes Opera does have a personality because it's dictated by his cat ears. And also when he finally catches it, Clara gives him a Devi 5. And then Alice looks put off by this, and then Irina's like, oh, did you want to do one as well?
Yes. Wish to
if I may
make hands with the master.
Yeah, and he momentarily almost comes to a conclusion that Aruba might not be a demon, but then dismisses it immediately.
He's quite a strange man, but I can't help but admire him.
Yes, because he points...
Yeah, it's like, yes, most demons lose interest on things very quickly. Yeah. He's very dedicated. fucking hell. Like, as a character, like, again, it shouldn't work, should be like, I am the rival character, but no, he's just like this super nice, dim as fuck dude. He's great.
See you put that, practice into practice, next time. It did feel like a bit, maybe a little bit overlong, they wanted to have next episode be fully in about a dodgeball thing, but they couldn't decide to jump into it partway through. Needed to have, I feel like, extend this slightly.
Sure, yeah.
And, the postscript is, Amelie, like, trying to do a Cabadon. But she smashes the wall.
Oh god, yeah, she's mad at me for not showing up the last couple of days.
Yeah, whereas we see her, like, in the episode going, like, oh, I guess I can wait a little longer to catch up on the next exciting volume of, like, however many hundreds of volumes there is of that manga.
And then the preview, Sullivan explaining that he's going to film this and surprise Aruba at his wedding with the footage.
Granddad, come on. embarrassing.
I do like how the previews don't necessarily have anything. They don't have jokes which recur in the actual episode.
Yeah. Feels like new content.
Yeah.
And it's worth watching. Yeah.
A little thing there about the actor for Clara Vadak.
That's right.
So, what's her face again? Find her again. Ayaka Asai. So, besides voicing Clara, you've seen Clara's family. We have, like, you know, two younger brothers. We have her mom. We got, like, a little baby sister.
Yeah.
The same actor voices all her entire family.
Fucking talented.
Which is, like, a very impressive range.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's really funny because you were saying, like, you were like, oh, who did voice any of her family? Oh, it's her. She voices her entire family. That's good stuff.
losing my voice again. Right, let's move on to the very next thing, which is My Hero Academia Season 4, Episode 70. Go!
Speaking of silly voices, we were completely remiss to not bring up Centipede's squeaky voice, which is not really apparent when reading the comic. They thought, hey, yeah, sure, that's the way he sounds. That's the way he sounds in the anime now.
He's one of those guys who is standing in the background and is like, what's that guy's deal? I want to read his comic. He looks great. Okay, he's sure. A gentleman centipede.
Yeah. Okay, hear it. I am in.
He's one of Nighteye's sidekicks.
We've been surveying the Yakuza for many weeks now.
Well, he's a centipede. He doesn't have a very loud voice. It makes perfect sense.
what's his face from Dressrosa and One Piece, yeah. Pika.
Yeah, oh yes.
Yeah.
So they find out where Eri's being held because of the Pretty Cure knockoff, show. Nighteye overhears somebody buying a toy in a way that an otaku would not, a man of his age would not buy a toy.
You just know Nighteye was specifically, I mean, like, obviously he was there as part of his, thing, but was he there to just buy merch? Well, I feel like he might have been there to buy merch.
Can I be both?
He did still,
I guess.
Yes, he did still buy it. And I suspect that, Fat Gum also buys them because of how defensive he got. Well, just because a guy's got buying a magical girl toy doesn't mean he's a criminal.
there's nothing illegal if I did that, if someone did that.
I'm not, look, it's quite good animation in the fight scenes, okay? God.
It's very well sculpted. I'm just saying, it'll increase in value, probably.
I'm stupid at punching. If a guy sit through, like, some lovely episodes and tales of, like, emotional development and people, and girls being friends with each other, then that's so far. But I'm stupid at fights, honestly. God.
And then he touches the guy on the shoulder and uses his power and discovers where Eri is. So. They get the cops, they call in the cops, they call the heroes together, we got a warrant.
I did like the way he grabbed him on the shoulder and was like, hey, yeah, this is the latest series. Like, the way he did it was absolutely flat-voiced him, but it still came across as creepy otaku who's trying to help you, other guy he thinks he can have a conversation with. It worked somehow.
But also, I the guy would know who he is because he's goddamn All Might sidekick.
See, that's the thing. If you didn't recognize him, he would still just come across as a weird, creepy guy in a shop. And if not, if you did recognize him, it's like, oh, I guess that guy's into some weird shit. Okay.
yeah, so they've got their everything set up. Then we get some more stuff about the kids, how they're feeling, particularly, I forgot his name again, Lemillion.
Hiroshima? Oh, yeah, yeah. Mirio Togata.
That's the fella.
Didn't Eraserhead give the girls an out? I think he gave them and, Kirishima an out, because basically they weren't as involved. They were involved in the kind of setup, but he's like, you guys don't need to fucking...
This isn't what you signed up for.
Exactly. Yeah. But, obviously they're all in on it, but they can't talk about it at school, and that's rough.
But yeah, I do like how they recognize that Mirio's, back to normal is by him behaving in the least normal way possible.
Swinging his arms really fucking weirdly.
Excited. Yeah. He's like a big golden retriever puppy.
Yeah. And they get there, their plan is, we'll just switch go on the intercom, announce that we've got a warrant, and the heroes will just charge in.
What if they charge right back out at you?
Yeah.
With your big, heavy brooder guy.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good thing we brought a dragon.
Yeah, even though I've read the comic, I'd forgotten she turned into a giant dragon.
You would see her in a dragon before this.
I know, but I'd still forgotten.
Oh, I guess I've never seen the dragon be specifically her. Like, I figured she had some kind of snake powers. I didn't know her. I guess I have seen her before and I've just bloody well forgotten it was her. Yeah, okay. Still, rad as shit. Which is like, I'll hold this motherfucker down, you guys go
ahead. Get in, see that little girl. But they got their own heavies. Got the 8 boys of the Hasai guy waiting in them on a dark corner.
I'm guessing those guys are not on the list that all the heroes got from the cops. So here's their known powers, so you can just run through who needs to do what.
Overhauls.
Luckily, most of them are named after the powers they have, so you can probably guess at least what they might be able to do.
Generally, it's pretty much a giveaway, all right.
An Overhaul's plan is that because they attacked before the warrant was read, he could say, oh, they were acting on their own. It had nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're reacting to a warrant. They're just lashing out before the warrant was read.
Does that have any fucking legal standing? Because holy shit.
Yeah, I guess they'll do some petty shit to escape.
I guess, yeah.
Like, they run the casinos, but no money is exchanged at the actual casino. What you do is, I'm going to leave the casino with my chips. And you just walk like 2 streets down to a different door where you exchange chips for money. And it's like, well, he didn't receive the money inside our casino. That was just some other thing. I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah.
It's the same reason why he's keeping his dad alive, even though his dad can't act as the leader, is because any crimes committed by the group, it's the dad will be the one.
The head is the guy whose head is on the block. Yes. Yeah.
And meanwhile, but also Gran Torino is not here because he's got some League of Villains business to take care of.
Yeah, well, that's good because the kids were told that they're not allowed to be here if the League of Villains are involved. So that means they can be here and nothing will go wrong ever.
Yeah, it's so good. Midoriya, as usual, is taking it all onto himself, which he shouldn't do. It isn't like his fault. It isn't his fault that a girl is being held captive and experimented on. He could have been, we're going to save her now. Don't worry about it. But
what's worse for him is obviously the fact that he can't talk about this with his friends and shit. Cause, you know, they got to keep it on the down low it's a secret operation by the police and the heroes and, you know.
Yeah.
But I did like your man kind of coming out to him and reaching out to him with exactly the same phrase. Yeah, you can see his friend's hurting and he knows I'm guessing you can't talk about it because you're not talking about it. So I'll be your buddy. Even your friend going like, you want half of my soba?
You don't have to talk about it, but I'm here for you. You just want somebody to chat with and take a mind off of us. I'm here. You just paying back that courtesy you did to him.
Exactly. Yeah. You still have friends, even if they can't support you in this particular thing.
And next week, it's Sunita's turn to take the spotlight.
And he has eaten some swordfish.
He has. Yes.
So wait for that to be deployed.
Oh, dear.
And looks like he gets a flashback as well.
Let's see Mirio with his mullet.
Then we've got the Vinland Saga, episode 20, Crown, which we finally see Sven's face.
His old, droopy, battered hound face.
Yes. I wonder how old he actually was at this point. Probably no
48.
I did actually like that joke in this episode where they asked the monk or the priest, whichever he is, like, what age are you? He's like, I'm 22. It's like, what the fuck, dude? What happened to you? Well, we're up in a seminary.
Well, you know, just shaving the beard and taking years off of you.
Yes.
I feel like it would add years on to me, you know. I've had this for so long if I didn't have it.
You'd be surprised. It'd be the Weird Al effect. It will take years off of you.
Like, I just shave the sides, and I still look younger anytime after I shave. It's weird. Less hair on the face is younger.
I just looked the same in photos for the last decade or more with the beard down. I'm thinking, okay, this is the secret then.
Yes, just hang on to the beard as long as possible, and then get rid of it, and you'll suddenly knock 10 years off you.
Okay. I got my 40th birthday all planned out now.
54 he was.
Okay, well, Thorkell's 50, but obviously he's in much better shape. You know, he's like, out fighting and killing dudes, keeps it fit.
And the king did look undead, so, you know, there's that as well.
Yeah. But he's got to sit, in the crown and obey its whims.
It weighs heavy on the brow.
I was interrupted by during Canute's speech because my mum rang me up, but I believe Canute was explaining that when he gets to heaven, he doesn't want to enter heaven because he'll have already built heaven on earth.
Oh, I'm sure the goodness that I do on this earth, God will bring up me up to his side and I'll tell him, fuck you, buddy.
I'm just going to slap him in the face.
Fuck you. I built heaven on earth. You can go fuck yourself with your stupid ass heaven.
Don't need you and your shit.
Your stupid trials to get fucking by your side and get your fucking... Yeah, fuck you, man. You're a real asshole. So he's mad at God now, which
I'm not sure he's mad at God in that way. I think
He's mad at the situation that mankind has.
He's just disappointed.
Yeah, I think he's...
Okay.
He's more like... I think he sees God's challenge for humanity. And he's going to be the one, even if it damns him.
Yeah.
That's at least going to start mankind on a way to some form of utopia. I'm not sure if it's in this speech, but at some point he admits that it's not going to be.
In this he says he's probably not going to achieve it within his lifetime.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. But he's going to start it.
It's as well, between Vikings going off wanting to die in a battlefield and between Christians huddling in their farmhouses, praying for salvation. People are just focused so much on what's happening after they die that they don't decide what to do when they were alive and try and do anything that way. He's trying to shape people out of that mold, saying, you're alive right now, you can change things right now, don't be one reliant on somebody come out and save you. Use your own will, your own power, whatever it may be, to improve things in this world.
It's almost like you can't take it with you, millionaires that control most of the money on the planet Earth and you could use to fix it.
But yeah, it's the same thing, but a similar thing to what Thor's did, except Thor's chose to remove himself from that society and start up again elsewhere. Whereas Canute is, he's going to remain in the society and force society to change.
To his wings, yeah.
Yeah, even if that will require the axes of Thorkell.
Well, like he says, he's going to direct their violence toward betterment rather than just general violence.
But we open with Flocky not believing that Thorkell is now one of Canute's followers.
That's bullshit.
That's the craziest report I've ever had. Hang that man. And Canute shows up and is like, what the fuck, dude? I sent you a letter. It's like, is that Thorkell? Yeah.
Is he wearing an eye patch? Oh, he sure is.
Huh.
And Askeladd's here too?
Is that Askeladd? What the fuck?
He's got one really big guy, one really little guy, and a sneaky dude. And that's kind of it. He just walks up like he fucking owns the place.
Kind of going, it's like, hey, send a letter to my father. This time make sure it's an accurate report. And so like, oh, sick burn.
Thorkell, I got a job for you. You go and make some friends with people. So go out and get drunk. Okay, boss, you got it.
Can do. Grabs his like fucking mate by the head and brings him with.
They go and see his dad, and there's like people waiting to kill them, hidden or waiting to kill them if they try and kill Sven. So it's kind of like, well, Sven knows that it's not, he can't just kill me. But at the same time, it's going to be pretty difficult for us to kill him.
Also, he could, if he does decide to kill me, he could easily fucking do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it would look bad on him because he can't have this tied back to him. He wants to be dead. And the idea was have you killed in a way that wouldn't link him to it. So yeah, the best thing we could do is just walk right under the lion's den.
As bold as brass.
He also observes that Thorkell does whatever he likes and yet everyone seems to like him.
He's a Viking.
He's not burdened so much for having to think about things.
Yes.
Like, one of his men was specifically saying, wow, I hope I can fight Thorkell to the death one day. I mean, like, I'm going to die, but it'll be fucking sweet. Like, they're all just like, yeah, brilliant.
Well,
I want to get to Valhalla, this is the guy I need to be around.
Oh, he'll like, knock you over the fences right into Valhalla.
Ragnar's brother shows up, who's also a conehead.
It just runs in the family, I guess, yeah.
What's his name? I can't remember his name.
Bernard.
That's it, yeah.
And, yeah, I knew it was similar. I can think of it.
And he was like, oh, the plan's all ready. We can, exile, we can get you into exile in Normandy. And he's like, yeah, no, thanks for doing all that, but plan's off.
Also, your brother is dead.
Also, your brother's dead. Also, we're gonna have to kill the king. And he's like, yeah, Messiah, you can say that here. It's like, no, nah, it's fine.
Oh, slow it down. You're not going to Normandy? Wait, my brother is dead? Wait, hang on, what?
Yeah, because he's been off in foreign places, like going like, oh yes, I'm consolidating our forces and our allies. And it's like, yeah, it's fine. We just have to kill the king.
Yeah. I learned French for you, dude.
He's like, yeah, get a bunch of men that you can trust and then tell me everything that the king's up to. But Ashkelad feels like he can't trust that guy. And he heads outside for a piss. And, Thorfinn is still, he still now seems to be practicing to fight Thorkell rather than Ashkelad. Because he's attacking a very highly raised bucket.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you want to kill Ashkelad, you gotta kill Thorkell first. It's like a fucking stacking fucking doll situation here.
The two brothers roll up, planning on leaving. The ones who tried to mutiny. We forgot to mention that one of them has completely lost his mind at this point and has regressed to childhood.
Yeah.
I mean, like, at least he's at childhood now. He seems to be in a better place. I'll give him that.
I don't intend to go to a better place. Astra says, here, dude, for the road, I got this bracelet. You know, you're going to need some money wherever you're going to. Just take this, go somewhere, live on a farm with your bro, and don't come back. Because if I see you in a battlefield again, I'll fucking kill you, even if I'm on your side. This life isn't for you. Just go and be at peace somewhere, away from all of this.
This is the conversation where we learn that... God, I've forgotten his name now.
Oh, yeah.
But Atli?
No, the big guy, the berserker.
The berserker dude.
Oh, Bjorn, oh, yeah, he's on Death's Door.
Yes.
Yep. But they get, like, yeah, he did get stabbed pretty fucking bad in the last episode, yes. Even though they just talked the way out of it.
Actually feels pretty bad then, because he's just like, oh, I kind of stabbed him there, didn't I?
I kind of stabbed him unnecessarily because the fight was already done. And he's like, yeah, just never take up a sword again, dude. You're not cut out for it. You're too nice, basically, is your problem.
Yeah. I think that's someone you got to take care of now. You can't do this anymore. Oh, geez, what also was dropped there, talking about, like, details and things being dropped in there as well in the previous confrontation with King Swen. Ashkelad intervenes for, I guess, to heal it, saying, my lord, you know, if we just do it this way, be reasonable. And, oh, yes, Ashlad. Covered in Ash, that's your nickname, though. That's your real name. Oh, no, sir, it's just Ashlad. That's all I've ever known by. Ashlad, yes, okay. Must be one of his mistress's daughters then, or maybe like a slave's daughter, a slave's son that he had to keep. Yeah. And he just gets super pissed off with that.
Yeah, I mean, like, he does say to his son, is like, hey, you got a good follower there, but he does, like, insult him several times on the way to that compliment. Yeah.
Yeah, get ready for more of that.
Oh, I think he's doing it on purpose. Yeah. I have no fucking doubt about it.
He definitely, the pair of them, yeah.
Because even Ashkelad is like, that guy's fucking smart. I can tell he knows what the fuck he's doing.
Yes, he does. Four more episodes. I'm pretty sure everything will fit neatly into the season now.
Oh, excellent.
Also, just there at the end, Leif Erikson's turned up. Still trying to find that runaway Thorfinn at the markets.
God, I feel so bad for the guy.
Well, you're going to feel maybe a bit worse for him.
I imagine so. It's that kind of show.
What he'll be forced to bear witness to.
I mean, where I'm up to in the comic, he's still alive, so. And, yeah. And other things.
His ordeal is to had to bear witness to these things but have maybe not the power to change them. Yes. He has to be there.
I mean, like, that's why I'm saying I feel bad for him, because he's so powerless in this situation, but in life in general. Yeah.
I mean, the good thing is, we learn later on, is that in attempting to find Thorfinn, he ends up doing other good.
I imagine he's not just doing this for years on end. He's still trading and whatnot, I imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. But we'll meet him, let's say, a little bit in this, and then a lot more when it comes back.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm hopefully this does well enough to get another season. Cause
I think it's been doing pretty popular, right?
It is. Yeah. The comic's wrapping up, so I assume once it's wrapped up, and that then becomes
an even
more appealing thing to finish off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, there are so many like little kind of cross promotional or parody things. They had that Zombieland Saga mock up, for example.
Yes.
So you know, it's captured the cultural consciousness.
I need that to come back as well. Man.
Oh yeah.
Digging out those music videos for Mad Stravaganza for Zombieland Saga just made me realise. Just I think I love it even more than I realised coming back to bits of it later.
The good songs.
I'm gonna have to rewatch it. Yeah, yeah. I wonder if it'll be better on rewatching than it was watching. And I was already good watching. Yeah.
Well, there's mysteries we need solving.
And more bullshit promotional things to do.
Yeah. Then we've got, let's get into some Toei stuff. I watched a little bit of One Piece. Kaido turns into a dragon.
Oh yeah, sweet. Fuck it. I meant to watch it for that reason.
It's worth watching that scene because, the animation's pretty crazy on the dragon. Like,
all right.
The extent of drawing every single scale.
Nice.
If I like just one, a key animator from since the start of the one hour. Okay, dude. You've got,
this you drew weeks. The short straw, you drawn scales. Sorry, but, bud.
Boy.
But I just got the volume of the manga which just came out, which is the material immediately following this week's episode.
And oh yeah.
That fight is going to be so drawn out in the anime. It's going to be. I've forgotten how many chapters it went for in the comic, and they try and drag at least two episodes out of each chapter now, don't they? So.
And there's so many guys coming in and saying, well, we've got to distract Kaido, we got to fool Kaido, we got to run away from Kaido.
Didn't they drag like fucking two pages out to like an episode?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. And the problem is, I think it might ruin the fight if you try and draw it out, because it...
Yeah, yeah.
It'll, because he's gonna have to do more punching, and it's going to have to be more even than it is. Anyway, I'm not going to watch it, so it doesn't really matter. But I was interested in seeing what it looked like. But I've got Kamen Rider 01, episode 13, My Job is Presidential Aide. So he gets his new power-up, Shining Hopper, I think. But it only makes him 1.8 times more powerful than he was before, and Dodo Assassin easily beats him. So they regroup, and Izu realizes that the problem is that the satellite had miscalculated exactly how good Aruto was at fighting, and so they need to upload more combat data to the satellite. So they take all the power-ups, and they upload them into the satellite, but that's still not enough. And so she's like, well, I'm the presidential aide. I've been recording his combat data. I will have to upload my memory into the thing. And because of security systems on the 01 project, this will kill me. But because my job is the presidential aide, I'm going to do this. And she's about to do it when Wazoo, the detective from who claims to be her big brother, from the last episode, leaps in, pushes her aside, and he uploads his combat data instead. And dies in the process, and has a flashback, which is holographically projected in the room so she can see it as well, of the granddad explaining that he was going to like put him to rest at this point so he'd return when Aruto needed him. And one day, your little sister will... obtain singularity as well, and she'll be a great aid to the grandson. And he's like, oh, I guess even human gears get to see their life flash before their eyes. And then she finally calls him Big Brother, and he dies. Then Aruto's just about to be killed. His normal form's been broken down by the assassin Dodo, but the final attack is blocked by the Shining Hopper power-up as it's thrown at him. And then he powers up, and this time he is now, as it's revealed, almost 500% more powerful. And the fight is absolutely fucking amazing. It's one of the best Kamen Rider fights I've seen in a long time. In the way it's filmed, the special effects, and the choreography. It is absolutely cracking. So the key to this one is that it shows in like computer graphics, like every possible attack he can take. And, Assassin Dodo can't keep up with where he like reacts to where he thinks he's going to attack, and then he attacks from one of the other spots instead. And then he has like an extra power up where he basically powers up the kick through to like, he's like bit, bite, killer, mega, giga, and then kicks him and, kicks him around the, scenery and, takes him down. And then the bad guys grab the Dodo's power up and run away with it before the heroes can get hold of it. And meanwhile, the guy from Zaya is looking on, and he's the guy who comments that he's almost 500% more powerful than he was before. And he's questions like, I wonder how he'll face against Thouser. And you can tell this guy's a creep because he dresses all in white with an umbrella. It's not even raining. So yeah, I think from one of the episodes I missed, there's a thing, a plot line where he wants to buy out hidden intelligence. And so that's the underlying plot there. I don't know if Thousand's going to show up next week, though. I don't think he is. What's happening, Pretty Cure?
It's happening, Pretty Cure. I'm still catching up with it. Good episodes there again. The government has found DT and can't get away. Malika's dad, who was the head of the Space Alien Investigation Agency, seems to be cottoned on that Lala is an alien posing as a school child going to the school they all go to. And he's trying to, like, follow that lead and they're all sniffing around and trying to, smoke him out. He uses the government tactic of spreading a nasty rumor around school so that the school team will then out them or shun Lala because she's an alien and she's doing stuff. It's like, oh, she's different. You don't want her in. With all the stuff about the villains coming along and like stealing their hearts and turning them into weird monsters and stuff. And then they wake up later and they don't know what happened. It's like, she's an alien and she's been abducting us all this time. I saw the X-Files once. It's like all the phenomena about missing time. I was waking up and then this, I don't know where I've been for the last hour or two. And then whenever I wake up, you're there and all you other girls like Yukaru and Elena and Malika and this cat girl. I don't know who she is. Did she go to the school? I don't know. So she's clearing names. She's been abducting us and saying, no, it's not a fucking vicious rumor. What, why she's your friend? Why are you being this way, man? Well, we didn't know who she was. I didn't know she could trust you. She's from somewhere else. And yeah, causing a lot of discord, a lot of ill will there. But when push comes to shove and the class is threatened by the invading villains in their UFOs, not even trying to be subtle about the whole thing, Lass comes out and says, hold on there. I'm going to take these guys out and say, what? Who were you? And then just kind of figures out, wait a minute, those are like girls you've seen before. It's like superheroes. And Carol, you're one as well? It's like, yes, it's supposed to be. And it's like, bring all the girls out and just transform right there in front of the class because it's like no fun. This isn't the way we should do things, but we're going to do it. And what's it now? Capara, the villain, is trying to take their twisted imagination, kind of their negative emotions out of their hearts to try and form a monster weapon of it, but they can't because the class is all on the side phone saying, you go and get them, girls. We were wrong about you all along. Very impassioned speeches about, yeah, we come from different places, from different backgrounds. We've got different beliefs, different personalities, we're from different different races, different nationalities. But we're all going to the same school, and we're all embracing each other's differences and celebrating them even. So whether you're an alien and whether you're kind of non-Japanese or not, or non-Japanese like in the latest case, something like that, we should all be on the same side about this, right? What else is happening then? As a result then of that kind of fallout of that, was her dad basically trying to out Lala in the school. But Madoka was then forced to confront her father, and he has plans for her, or she's going to go along with the whole thing, or you'll be a high achiever and you will, after finish middle school, you're going to go and study in London, far away from all of this. I won't watch a concert with these girls or anything like that at all. And she doesn't want to rock the boat, but she's feeling very conflicted inside. They call her the moon, the moon of the middle school. And just kind of wondering, why do you call me that? Because Elena is the sun, because she's so bright and cheery and everybody loves her. But the moon just reflects the light of the sun. So I only just seem like I'm elegant and nice and everything like that because I'm surrounded by people who, are right next to me. And I just like reflect that and amplify that. Like, what about my own shine? What about my own sparkle? Where's that going to come from? So it gets into a fight with Galogre then. He's like the second in command, I suppose, of the Night Raider, the space pirates. And, but it's going fucking 10 rounds slugging out with this dude. There's some nice, cuts of animation there for us getting torn up. And she'd fun socking him right back as well. Nice, really down and dirty stuff. And she's just, kind of finds in that, she doesn't know what she was doing. She got kind of thrown into this whole pretty girl thing and doesn't understand, where, precisely it came from really, or why she's in it, but she went for it anyway, and she's been going along with it, and she's getting along just fine. So, she's going to keep going to school with her friends, and I don't care what you say, Dad, I don't know what's going to happen next. You might have a plan for me, but I have my own plan, I want something of my own life, I want to find out for myself where this is going to take me, so I want you to back off and let me fight crime, slash go to school.
Okay.
That's what I can vaguely recall. I watched him a little while ago. but again, it's keeping up with that whole, like stronger themes again, I guess, because it's, get into the backstretch of it. So it's going to be going for digging down into the stronger material. And, that's much with the villains this time around, but, we'll probably get that again, sure. And yeah, another, theme being brought to the fore of, people who may not be where you were from or who are different to you, and how you should respect their differences and embrace them, even that if not embrace them, at least respect them and acknowledge them for who they are. They shouldn't have to try and blend in, or they shouldn't have to try and, you know, just conform and go along with the crowd. That's because they're different is what makes them so vibrant and wonderful to be around, and what's different about them can really enhance and enrich our own lives. It was a kind of nice little scene just when, you know, Lala is just making this impression piece trying to defend the class, and then the Carol is right up against her and saying, "The Carol, they know I'm an alien, but they don't know what you are." Performing pretty curious, but say, "I don't care, dude, you're my bud. I'm standing right next to you." It's just think of like if someone comes out to you. I say I'm gay, I'm whatever, and you can put and say, "That's fine, I'm going to stand up right next to you and say I'm not gay, but I'm with you, man." No, just brave and a courageous act to do, to stand along somebody, even when, you know, you instinct and pretend you just kind of go along the crowd, don't cause a fuss. But no, like, you have to stand up for people and with people if that's something you truly believe in and respect.
Mm.
You know, and that can apply again to any number of things. Someone saying where you're like, you have maybe a friend at school is from a different country or a different religion or different X, Y, and Z. It's all, one grand lesson that applies to many things in life. And again, yeah, it's a stronger theme I'm happy seeing, like, kind of built upon and then reinforced and then kind of culminated again in the Zimstorders. And again, some nice animation in this one too. So it's kind of, again, also in the backstretch, some stronger cuts of that to him. So we'll keep that coming. I will be caught up with it entirely by next week. I think I'll watch it closer to recording time, so I remember a little bit better. But that's the main thrust of it anyway. It's going in the right direction.
In Rear Soldier episode 36, The High Speed Bodyguard. My brain's gone blank. I forgot his name. The green one. They think he...
Tommy.
It's not Tommy, no. Canelo spots a hottie with carrying two ice creams, of which he is super impressed because she must be, I can't remember exactly what he says, but she is like, she must be super tough to eat two ice creams in this weather. And, yeah, she trips and drops one of the ice creams, and he leaps, hits the ground to catch the ice cream. And she's like, oh, thank you for that ice cream. I can give it to him. And he's like, him? Oh, no, there's a him. And it turns out the him is, our green Ryosoga, whose name I've still forgotten. And
Tommy.
He's impressed that, he's got a girlfriend, but the rest of them are like divided because he was supposed to show up for training and he hadn't shown up for training, and he's like gallivanting around with a girl. But Ko's like, I trust him impeccably. I'm sure he's got a perfectly good reason why he was with her and wasn't with us. And it turns out he does, because she has stolen the device he uses to transform into a Ryosoga in order to force him to be her bodyguard. And meanwhile, Whizzle is annoyed because, as he mentioned last week, that he was excited by the fact that Precious had stolen his heart and it might be crumpled at any time. But it turned out that if you don't have a heart, you can't get excited by anything. You can't feel the excitement because his heart's inside a playing card somewhere. And so he gets Creon to make a super fast, Minosaur in an attempt to steal the card back, but he ends up stealing a dummy card and then gets told, if you want your card back, you're going to have to beat the Ryosogas. So instead he tries that out. Turns out the girl that is being bodyguarded is a race car driver who was doing very well but is now getting criticized, and it turns out she is the source of the Minosaur. She's upset that she can't live up to the expectations that other people have for her. She gets talked around out of, well, she gets made more and more depressed by Creon, and by holding her hostage. He manages to steal the transforming device off her, holds her hostage with his giant fork again, and so that causes the Minosaur to grow massively big. The green Ryosoga, whose name I still can't remember, gives her a stirring speech, which brings her around, and she manages to get the item back after they steal a trick from JoJo's Part 4, and they use the, I can't remember which one it is, it's a thing which, they've got a power which makes things heavy, and so that causes the thing to drop out of his hand, and, he can transform, the Pterodon turns up, they all combine, they beat the Minosaur up. The end! I'm sure there was a payoff at the end with the girl and the confusion over being... Oh, yeah, the other thing was she'd asked him... He was like, I've got a duty to perform. And then she asked him the question, well, what are you planning on doing after you've finished your duty? And that's kind of the question he asks at the end, I think. It's like, once we beat the Druidons, what are we going to do then? And so,
like, as a come on, it's like, what are you doing later?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's a bit like that. I think they do leave the hint of romance at the end for the pair of them. But he's got to defeat the monsters terrorizing the Earth first.
Hmm.
And Ko ends it by saying, let's fight to protect their futures! And they all wave their fists in the air excitedly as a episode which felt much more like the early episodes is over and done with. Was the preview? The preview is another power-up, which appears to involve Ko using the maximum, whatever the form, that camera is called now, the ultimate form he's got, and then riding on the back of Tiramigu in his tiny form. The ultimate tag team is born! So that should hopefully have some entertaining choreography, and I don't know how they're going to manage it, having a guy inside a dinosaur costume with another guy inside a superhero costume standing on his back. Whether that's just a one-off pose, or whether they're going to try and do some sort of moving around in that situation. We shall see. Then, finally, on the Toei front, we've got Gege Gege no Kitaro, Chain of Hatred, the Yokai Hoko. in one of those stories, which unfortunately, I like the action in this. I like some of the message. I don't like the fact that the plot kind of relies on people being stupid.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, if anyone had sat down and explained something to another character, it would have been fine. But including the guy on his Instagram, apparently, should have explained why he liked that tree.
This could have just as easily been a cautionary tale about when you're sharing your holiday and throws a bomb and trying to hype some place up, and then you draw a lot of attention onto it and it just completely wrecks the place. And about being careful about what you share about and making, place, and you know,
yeah, making personal stuff like for the clicks or whatever. Yeah, I could see it being one of those kind of stories.
But instead, it becomes like a much more broader and wide-reaching thing of again about the conflicts between York guys and humans and how they can't live together in the same world.
Yeah, even though we've established several times that yes, they totally can. They can even become manga artists if they're really working it. Just got to get past the industry part. Yeah, but I mean, like at least it's got good animation.
Yeah.
It's got that going.
It has, but yeah, this was one of my least favorite episodes of the show. Just because of, it's like the, so the crux of the thing is we've got a mystery yokai in a mask wandering around abducting people. Turns out that he's abducting people who've been taking photos of themselves, at this particular beauty spot and leaving a load of rubbish behind. But that's not the reason why he's attacking them. The reason why he's attacking them is because his tree's being cut down. The reason his tree's being cut down is because...
The old guy who's like the guardian of the place, or has been for generations, his family has cut the tree down because everyone was coming there to ruin the fucking locality. And he apologized to the old guy, and the old guy was like, well, fair enough. I understand why you did that. But I'm going to find that fucking Instagrammer and I'm going to murder him.
Everyone's taking photos of it because of this one particular photo which went viral.
Yeah, it's a nice photo. So. Yeah.
But the problem is everyone blames him. Even our heroes blame him. And there is no way he's to blame.
Yeah, no, specifically at the end, it's like even the monster guy is like, oh, I know you. I know you looked fondly on the tree and I know that I respect what you've become and I'm actually quite proud of you. But I still gotta murder you because I'm a baddie.
It's more the fault of everybody who kept that and left a pickle in a big vat, which Kitaro was like, fuck him, let him die.
But also, the guy overreacting whose only plan to deal with these people is to cut the tree down. And at no point does that guy get any blame. He does leg it at one point when he realizes.
Yeah, up like a no trespassing sign or something.
Go to the council, or whatever the local government situation is in Japan.
But that's what Nuari Hion wants, to deal with this by a local council. Get frustrated by it, and then we think, ha-ha, you see, the government can't do anything for you, yokai. It's up to only I, with my power and influence, can change things for the better.
Dear.
Who are you voting for on December 12th? Vote Nurari Hihan.
Which one? Which one of the four fucking elemental guys should I vote for? That was a weird reveal because I was like, okay, clearly his elemental powers, and I could see from the episode, like, he's doing them in order, and I was like, that's going to be pretty part of it. It was like, haha, not only does he have to do them in order, but there's four of him. That was a weird reveal.
Well, that's a big treat.
Yeah, I'm going to guess the things taken directly from the comic are the people being put in the pickle barrel.
Mm.
And the splitting into four versions.
Four guys who can't touch.
It's the fact that you always said we. I knew that felt like he was.
I thought they were just doing like the old fashioned, like the royal we or something. Yeah, that makes sense.
No, I thought it was going to be like more than one of them.
Well, what Yokai has fire powers and wind powers and earthquake powers. It's like, okay, it's going to be like
Yokai,
a bunch of them, yeah.
But that's what I was saying, like, it's a weird, like, reveal. It's like, oh no, there was really a bunch of them. It's like, okay, so I guess there are more guys to fight? Cool. Because the fight's actually pretty good.
Yeah, and Kidero's plan is for this guy just to kick the shit out of him to get his anger out. But this guy has 2,000 years worth of anger.
Burns the town down.
Yes. And, the guy who took the original photo is just left weeping at what's been done in his name, and he had nothing to do with it. He just took a photo and it went viral.
Hmm.
So
tell T2 to have a popular musical career. Scumbag.
I was teaching to make an emotional connection with a tree.
Maybe I was trying to say, well, yeah, great, but maybe keep that to yourself. You know, it's a personal moment. You don't need to broadcast it all over social media.
That's, yeah, but again, to blame him for that is very cruel of the episode to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Like, keep your own things personal and that kind of thing. But it's like, well, don't ever share. Don't ever love anything, kids. That's the lesson.
Yeah. It was just this serene spot. He had like a hard time growing up. He was bullied in school. He dropped out. He started working and he built himself up. And the tree was always something you could always like.
Yeah, the symbolism of the tree always just standing there was something that really meant something to him. Yeah.
His guiding marker that he was able to steady himself on. He built like a musical career out of it. It's like, oh, I just want to, you know, he's come so far, like, you know, 10 platinum records. I was from this Instagram post. I just love coming to the spot. It's been this nice little bit where I've also been so trying to do a whole thing. Yeah, I'm like a big multi-million selling artist, but also I'm just enjoying simple things. And this is where I started out and where I come from now. It's pretty good, right? And yeah, naturally people can feel that the wrong way and it becomes this fucking hot spot. And then,
but like even the yoga going is like, I recognize you. You looked at the tree every day and I'm proud of you, son, for what you've become. But you still got to get murdered for chopping down my tree. Although you didn't do it. That other guy did it, but he's not going to get any blame. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. It's just trying to like stoke up again the tensions between the yokai world and the human world. We're flashing back to previous instances where, Kitarachi has been fairly in tune with the anger of this place, yokai, and what has been just been done to their ancestral homes. And also as well, yeah, humans are a bunch of fucking shit sometimes. Here's a couple of dudes that I dealt with are allowed to be put on a train to hell, for example. But they're not all like that.
Yeah. You can't paint all with the same brush kind of thing.
Next week's episode is Chin-san, the Foreign Worker.
God. Well, yeah, I hope there's another lesson to be learned here. Maybe something more cogent and to the point.
Yeah. Okay, it's the Yokai Chinpo.
I'm guessing this is literally like Chinese Yokai, or like basically foreign workers.
Chinpo is a country bumpkin Yokai from South Asia. He can fire jet streams out of his penises in order to fly.
His name Chinpo, Dwayne. Come on, why would you?
But it's still funny.
And he could fart out gas bombs.
Oh God!
It's just his culture, man. You don't need to hate him for it. Which public will undoubtedly will, and Kira will have to teach him a valuable lesson about tolerance.
Looks like generally in the stories he is part of Nurahion's yokai army. So I'm going to guess it will be a Nurahion episode next week.
Oh, in which case you're going to have a bad experience. And then someone's saying, Kitaro, try to teach me, like,
Tolerance, but not to watch over me.
Sit up for. I'm going to go on with Narihion. He says he's going to, use his influence of Paramount to enact laws so that I can discriminate against people whenever I want and not get arrested for it. Like, no, Chinpo, don't be a dick.
Let's see if that's true. I think at least these guys are getting more build up than just appearing as like members of the Yokai army, which I think
they have
in the past.
Yeah, understanding like, okay, this is why I'm throwing in my lot with Narihion and his, quite hard nosed stance about the Yokais and humans and the relationship. Because, yeah, this guy makes a lot of sense. And just coming along with this to be a villain.
Yeah.
But as well, Narihion, I imagine, is like probably got his own things for doing that as well. You can probably, I can see there's going to be like an episode, probably very soon, where it's like he's going to lay it all out. And I can see your point. Yeah, I don't agree with your methodology, but I can see your point.
Yeah. I still think he's going to be the one who beats Blackbeard as like the thing which cements him as being the hero in the yokai world's eyes. Or at least the eastern yokai world's eyes. We shall see. I wonder if something will happen around Christmas as to escalate the plot before we go into what I assume is the final 13 episodes.
a very merry un-Christmas because it's a Western thing.
I can't remember what they did. That. I think they had a Christmas. Did they have a Christmas episode last year?
Didn't they? Yeah, make sure they did.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
I know I just downloaded two Christmas Doraemon episodes that someone had put subtitles up for. I think now, so going back, I just had the list of the things
I've been going. No.
Kitaro. 2018. Search for December. Oh, no, apparently there's no dates on here. 2018. Oh, God. Sorry, all those pinging noises.
What's the new year?
18, 12. No, more pinging. There we go. Witches of Destiny, the Transform All Japanese Yokai Project. No, it was facing off against Blackbeard, it was Christmas.
Okay, Christmas is just the time for climactic battles, I guess.
Yeah, so then it was there was a New Year's episode. New Year's Cannibal Mystery.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, you know, episode about Western traditions, Western spirits and figures invading our Japanese society. We gotta fight them off.
Righty-ho, that is everything for this week. We didn't watch any more Promare, so...
Well, did you go see it again? Because you can, there are still screenings available.
Yeah, not near me, though. Nearest, I think, is Kingston, Odeon.
Yeah. Although I did get one there for, kind of turned up, kind of, I don't know, I don't say I don't know, but kind of surprisingly, instead of news, I'm going to take in tomorrow night, because it's just down the road from me in Dalston. They got a screening of this film Angaku, aka Our Sound, which is about three delinquents who try to form a band despite not knowing how to play any instruments, try to impress girls. It was pretty fun. This is part of like the London Animation Festival. I thought this is like a nice little addition, nice little feature to put out there. So I'll go check it out tomorrow evening at time of recording, and maybe we'll report back my findings.
Rightio, otherwise we'll be all be back here next week for more. Let's go. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.